to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners. Today, I am joined by our director of business development, Caitlin Kerrigan. Hello, Caitlin.
Hello, Jodi. I'm excited to be back with the podcast.
Yes, we have so much to talk about. This topic hits a nail on the head for you and I in the biz dev world. One of the big takeaways was the power of persistence. And our guest, Liz Cavalieri, she's the VP of sales at Melanie Goetz. She shared a lesson that she learned early in her career that you have to hear 9 no's before you get to 1 yes. And, you know, I was doing my own mental math in my head. I'm like, wait, maybe sometimes it feels like 100 no's and 1 yes.
It does sometimes.
So why don't you tell us about one of your recent yeses that you got for Base Beauty?
Yeah, this is an exciting one. It's a brand called Afnan Perfumes, and we just signed on with them for a PR project. They're actually way bigger now, learning more about them, and they're a Arabic fragrance brand based in Dubai. They have just done this crazy launch where they did 15 global events. They have Ed Westwick as their spokesperson, and we are, you know, now partnering with them to bring all this awareness to the US for this fragrance and this brand. And it's just really exciting to kick off with them. So we're really looking forward to this one. It was a very exciting yes to get after. Like you said, it feels like it's 100 no's sometimes.
Well, this is such great timing because we just finished a year plus working on Kaoli, another mega brand in our roster, and they are also based in Dubai. So we have a lot of experience with fragrances that are wildly popular in the Middle East coming over the US. And for Afnan, they're on Ulta.com, right? So this is a really exciting time for them to be partnering with us on PR in the US.
Yep. Just launched on Ulta.com and we'll soon see them in store. So yeah, look out for more about Afnan Perfumes.
Well, congratulations, Caitlin, on that yes, because I know it feels good. And we ring the bell in our offices and at our desks when great things happen. So I'm ringing the bell for you, but not on this recording. It'll be annoying to anyone listening.
Oh, I appreciate that. So who do we have on the show today, Jodi?
Okay, so 2 powerhouse leaders, Jeff Giordano, Martinez Fonts. He's the founder of Geo Marketing Consultants. And I actually met him because he was our client at Sally Beauty. He was at Sally for many, many years. He actually just went out on his own. And Liz Cavalieri, she's the VP of sales at Melanie Goetz. And this conversation is really about what it takes to build brands, lead teams, drive sales when the consumer expectations are constantly evolving.
Yeah, I love this episode. You know, what's very interesting is Jeff and Liz actually took very different paths to where they are today. So Jeff's journey started in social media before he led these initiatives at Sally Beauty, while Liz really worked her way up from behind the beauty counter to becoming a sales executive at some of the industry's most recognizable brands, such as Estee Lauder, Laura Geller, Beautystat, and Grown Alchemist.
Liz is a really good salesperson because she was just telling us about an upcoming launch, a tomato collection launch, and it's like, oh my God, I need this right now. So I think it comes out in August. So you know, this is 2 months ago at this point that we recorded together, and it's still in my mind. So she's very good at what she does.
Yeah, I know. The way she described it, I was like, I need to add this to cart immediately. So I'm very excited for that launch. But yeah, the episode explores, you know, the delicate balance brands face between innovation and authenticity. So it's always difficult for brands to know, like, how do you launch new products, but keep up with trends, enter new categories, all without losing the identity that consumers really trust within these brands.
And our theme of this quarter is shelf strategy. And both Liz and Jeff gave us their fascinating insight as to what it takes to, you know, get something on the shelf and let it grow there. So from product development, consumer behaviors, and how to stand out in a crowded marketplace.
Yes. And as always, these episodes are just so good for anyone listening from leadership perspective. So for anyone managing people, you definitely want to pay attention to their leadership philosophies. So they talk about, you know, coaching and mentorship to clear communication and team empowerment. And they really shared, you know, practical approaches to building cultures where people can thrive. And it's just so important to have leaders like that today in the beauty industry.
So whether you're in beauty, retail, sales, marketing, or leadership, this episode's packed with lessons on adaptability, resilience, innovation, and earning consumer trust.
Okay, let's get into it. Here's episode 309 with Jeff Giordano, Martinez Fonts, and Liz Cavalieri.
I want to take a pause and thank CEW, who is our partner in this series. CEW is where beauty comes together. And I am sitting with Lisa Campione. She's the Director of Events at CEW, and we have a message for you.
As the beauty, health, and wellness industry's largest member community, CEW connects more than 6,000 leaders across brands, retailers, suppliers, technology, and media.
I've been a member for, I want to say 15 years, although it's 16 or 17, and I think I can see how long I've been a member on the site, right, if I go back to my page, so I'm going to look. But CEW is so impressive. Through high-impact events, industry insights, and professional development, members gain access to the relationships, knowledge, and opportunities shaping the future of beauty.
Discover how CEW can accelerate your career at CEW.org and use code WBMB20 for 20% off of your first year of membership.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are so excited to discuss all things about beauty and sales with Jeff Giordano Martinez Fonts. He's a founder at Geo Marketing Consultants, and Liz Cavalieri, Vice President of Sales at Malin and Getz. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Jeff, where did you come from today? Where were you?
Tampa, Florida.
Tampa, Florida.
So my husband and I live in Tampa. We have our dog there, family's all there, and took a very, very early flight this morning and then flying out right after this.
And Liz, where did you come from?
I came from Westchester, but our office is right around the corner.
That's right. Yes, I've been in your office. Oh, how cool. That's awesome. So this is a career journey show. Yeah. So we're going to go back in time, go down memory lane. Mm-hmm. And Liz, we'll start with you. I really feel like we start to build our vision of what our future life is like and our career when we're quite young. So take me back to 10-year-old Liz. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I wanted to work in beauty.
Come
That's it. That is all I ever wanted to do. I had one of those Fisher-Price makeup stations when I was a little girl, and that solidified it. That cut the deal right there. So all I ever wanted to do was work in beauty.
How did you know that was even a job?
I didn't at the time. I thought I could be a hairdresser.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, this would be my way in. So I did go to hairdressing school. When I was in high school, I decided I was going to take that vocational school and become a hairdresser. And that was really my first event that I did. And then when I was in high school, I so desperately wanted to work behind the counter that I got a job at Bloomingdale's in White Plains working behind the counter. And, you know, you were supposed to be 18 at the time, but I was not 18 at the time. So I just was able to get this job, and I was so excited, and that really started the journey. And I started working for a company called Cardo Cosmetics, which no longer exists. But the philosophy behind the brand was that you were going to go out from behind the counter and recruit a customer and sit her in the chair. And no one was doing that at the time. You were behind the counter servicing the consumer. So this was really new thinking, and that behavior just stayed with me my entire career.
Okay, Liz, this is amazing. And most of the time, these are not linear, right, from 10 years old to actually, like, you know, what you're doing for your whole career. So we're going to come back to this. Jeff, you're 10 years old. What's on your mind?
Pokemon. And very similar to Michelle, in the last one, I wanted to work with animals. I was really into ocean, and like I grew up all around beaches, so surfing. But I once I like was like, oh, I need to actually make a career. I wanted to be a surgeon, so I went to started college as a bio pre-med, ready to go. Basically, what happens is we all pick our classes, but for bio pre-med, they go, here you go. Doesn't matter what time the classes are, and giving a 17-year-old freshman, 7 a.m. chemistry was not smart for anyone. So I failed. And my advisor was very much, hey, you need to choose something else. So I did. And I went into psychology and public relations. So I was more in the space of I just want to help people. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll be like a psychiatrist. I want to find a way to help people. That turned into working in social media back when it all started happening in the agency world. And then I've worked through many different areas, but very similar to the previous guest. I would say I'm newer to beauty. I've been in beauty for coming up on 6 years now.
So I love this pairing because we have Jeff here at Sally Beauty. You've been there for many years, and you're transitioning into your own business. And then Liz, you're at a brand, right? Yeah. So we're going to get like two sides of the same coin here, right? We have actually like the physical store where people shop, and we have the product that they want to shop. So we're going to have a lot of fun in this conversation. But let's start with Journey, because you gave us some of this already, Liz. Like, you were like, I want to work in beauty. And then you got your cosmetology license, and then you worked in beauty. So I hear this so many times, like executives in our industry start behind the counter on the sales floor. So, you know, what are the three things you learned when you had to go off at the counter recruit customers that you still use today in your work?
You're going to be rejected. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no's. You need to ask 10 times before you get one yes. And that has stayed with me, particularly I'm in sales. And so you just need to keep having the conversation. You don't need to close the sale every time. You just need to have the conversation.
Wow. Can we just pause here for a second? Because I feel like this is a life lesson, not just a beauty industry lesson. This is applicable to everything we do in our life, right?
Correct.
So was this an easy lesson to learn?
No, it's not an easy lesson to learn. And it's actually a lesson that I try to teach the field team now, because I'm responsible for the field team. And I've tried to sow this message to every field team member I have worked with, that before you even recruit a customer and get that sale to your brand, you need to ask 10 people. But you just need to have the conversation. And no is okay, because the next one's going to be yes. And when you get that yes, you're so excited.
I would think it's more like 100. You need to talk to 100 yeah. people before you get a sale.
About 10.
Is it really
yeah,
true?
Yeah, no, it's about 10 people on the sales floor.
Wow, okay. I'm going to see if that relates back to my new business role at my agency, to see if I talk to 10 people, do I get one client? I will report back.
Okay.
I feel like for me it's 1,000, but we'll see.
I'm going to do the same thing. I'll report back to you.
Okay. So Jeff, you said you started in social when social was brand new.
Yes.
What was that first job in social like?
Chaotic. So my very first job was right out of college at an agency in Orlando that making pennies, but had 27 clients, and I was responsible for their social presence, their website, their PR, content creation. And what it was like was just like boot camp, because you go through college, you do your internships, but then this is like, oh my gosh, there's clients that will fire you if you don't deliver. So I look back on that and I'm like, yeah, it was grueling, but I feel like I paid my dues, as they say it, but I'm like, I learned so much so fast. And that's where I felt like that like fire and trajectory, like go forward and get in. And then I went into corporate and went down that path. But I mean, 80-hour weeks. But I worked on like, I had a client who's like a psychic, which was, because it was all like small businesses.
Wait, you were representing a psychic on social media? Okay, tell us more.
She would... Basically, she wanted to promote her business and do readings, and so she would bring forward some of her cases, and we would create content. This was before Instagram launched, so we were just Twitter and Facebook at this time. And so it was really interesting to like start the day talking to her, and then I went to Gerald, who was a real estate agent, and I had a wealth management person. So you're like, oh wow, there's so many ways to make money out here.
So full disclosure, Jeff and the Base Beauty team worked together many years ago on a launch at Sally, which is really fun, a hair color brand.
Oh, it was fun. The brand was called Strawberry Leopard, and it's still there. It's doing phenomenal. And we all know hair color can be very, doesn't smell great, and very chemical and damaging. And so Strawberry Leopard's an own brand that we create. So we have our national brand portfolios, we have our own brand portfolios, also called mostly called private label. And this product was serving a market need to both heal your hair while you're coloring, but also smelling great and making it an enjoyable experience and a vivid color. So have fun. This launched during COVID when vivids were spiking. And so it was a really perfect time to go into the market. So we partnered with BBCA to do celebrity endorsements, did PR packages, and really kicked that brand off in a really positive way.
It's surprising that, like, you know, a juicy grapey flavored hair color didn't come along until just recently, right?
Because it was right when I started, I was like, oh, this is innovation. I thought we would, as I was learning beauty, and I was like, no, like these are still challenges in the market. And I really think the last 5 years, especially in hair color, the industry is moving to hair health preservation. So you're seeing a lot of formulations come forward now that are putting that integrity of your hair first, not just the end result, while still achieving the end result. And I feel like Sally's done a phenomenal job kind of leading that forefront, and now you're seeing all the smaller brands and individual brands pick up on that technology.
So, Liz, back to you. I know you mentioned that the first counter job, that brand doesn't exist anymore, but you've worked with many other places. So tell us about the trajectory of your career.
Yeah, so then after I spent time at Cardo Cosmetics, I then, when I was in college, I did an internship at Revlon as part of my college, you know, class, and that was in product development. But then I realized that I really just love sales. So I started working for Estee Lauder. And again, I was, you know, behind the counter. So it was really my first way in. And I was a beauty advisor at an outpost on the third floor and, you know, had to prove yourself and really make your sale. So then I graduated to the main counter and then I became the counter manager. Then I became an account coordinator. And I felt like, oh boy, this was amazing. You know, I was just so happy to be an account coordinator at the time. I had Macy's, I had Lord & Taylor's, you know, rest in peace, Lord & Taylor's, you know, it was a great store.
Raise your hand if you've shopped at Lord & Taylor. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was sad.
Yeah, it was sad. But I was really very excited and had this account coordinator job, had Bloomingdale's 59th Street, and that was, you know, all under the Estee Lauder umbrella. And then I started working in the spa division of Estee Lauder, and Estee Lauder had opened up spas across the United States. Then I went and I had a child, and then I came back, and I came back to the Clinique brand, and I was a coordinator at the Clinique brand, and then I became a regional sales director with another brand called Prescriptive, that some of you may or may not know.
Well, also an RIP.
Yes,
right?
Also an RIP.
Raise your hand if you know Prescriptives. Okay, wow, that's a lot more people than I thought, which is, I always talk about that brand as it was ahead of its time.
So ahead of its time. It had like color stories. It was the MAC of before MAC. And so it was really a wonderful brand. And I actually was the last person out the door when we closed that brand.
Oh, wow.
I was the last person out of Lauder. And so it was really sad for me and really life-changing because I had spent so many years there and I had gotten such great education. And then I said, well, what am I going to do with myself when I grow up? So I had this opportunity to go work for this small brand called Philosophy, which at the time, nobody knew of Philosophy. They were this small brand out in Arizona. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to take a leap of faith here and go work for them. And the first 30 days, I said, oh, I made such a big mistake, right? And so...
Like, how mom and pop are we talking about?
Like, I mean, like, pretty small. I mean, it was you know, it was a D2C brand, and they had a few stores. And, you know, it was really pretty small. And so I joined, and then 60 days later, I said, this was the best mistake I ever made. Because I felt like I had all this knowledge from working from a big company, and now I was working for this small indie. And now we talk about indies like it's nothing, right? But then nobody even knew what an indie brand was. And so I could then implement all the learnings I had, and I could work very fast. And I could implement and be nimble and get results quickly. So with that, I then launched the brand into Ulta.
Wow. And wow, they were lucky to have you, huh?
Yes, we were all lucky to have each other, I think. It was really a group effort, and Ulta had 250 doors at the time.
Wow.
So it was really a novice and really new into the industry, and so we launched there, and we doubled our business within the first year.
And how many roles was it in between Philosophy and where you are now?
I then was at Laura Geller Beauty with Alana from CEW, who I just adore. And then so I was there, and then I was at Elemis. And then from Elemis, I was at Beauty Stat, and now I'm at Malin & Goetz.
I love the all-star lineup of the brands through the years.
Yeah, it's been a great journey.
So, Jeff, let's go from the psychics, the insurance agents, the, what else did you say, real estate people?
All of it.
How did you get out of that pool of places into beauty?
So, I've gone through many different industries. So, it started with, I went first out of the agency into hospitality. So, I worked for Wyndham and for Darden Restaurant. So, I was the brand manager for... and social manager for the Capital Grille and Eddie V's North America. So, which phenomenal job.
Yeah,
working
like
in restaurants
job.
Is like, you're selling an experience.
Right.
That's it. And great food. And it was such a great place to learn business acumen. because when you, I don't know if anyone else can relate, when you work in social or PR, you're kind of pigeonholed into a channel and a tactic, but Darden was very demanding in a positive way of you must learn how to operate as a business owner. Mm-hmm. While also like learning and honing your craft. So from there, I ended up moving to Austin, Texas, and was at global headquarters for Whole Foods Market on the social and influencer team, where I met an incredible leader of mine who's still a great friend and mentor. From there, I went into sports nutrition because fitness is a huge part of my background. I was a personal trainer and a spin instructor for many years. And then the pandemic hit. And so gyms closed down, sales were going down, and then I got the opportunity to go talk with Sally Beauty. And that's when I was like, I'm ready to get out of like stuff that you consume. Because I've been in like food and sports nutrition for way too long. It's a very legal business of like every like claims. And so took a wild hit and just said, yeah, I want to go learn something new that I don't know.
And they were totally fine with the fact that like the whole beauty.
That I had no beauty experience. Mm-hmm. They liked that I had retail experience with Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. But they took a chance, and I will say I probably know way more than I ever wanted to know about every category as a consumer and a scientist and a product developer. But now I can go shopping with my husband and my friends and family and be like, no, 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 you don't want that. Like, or let's go this way, mm-hmm. and here's the ingredients to look for. So the knowledge I've gotten just as a consumer of how the formulations, to how the products are made, how the PD development's life cycle is just, that's been phenomenal knowledge.
So we're here to talk about shelf strategy, right? Like there's a lot that happens behind the scenes to actually get something in front of a digital shelf or an actual physical shelf. So you talked about product development, Jeff. We talked about what it's like to be on the floor and actually sell this. So Liz, from your perspective and the role that you're in, if the product isn't great, your job is impossible, right?
Correct.
So have you ever been in a situation in your career where you're like, I am selling something that does not work? You don't have to name names. Or you can. Yeah. Your choice.
I mean, I have been in the challenging position where it's not resonating with the consumer.
Right.
Not to say that the product necessarily was not great. It was good, but it wasn't best, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And also what happens is you create a product, and it's really great at the moment, but then the innovation doesn't follow, mm-hmm. right? Because Night Repair has been through how many iterations, correct? And so you have to improve, and you always have to be on this continual path of greatness. Mm-hmm. And you have to be very nimble and flexible in your product development. And if you're not innovating, this is where you can get stuck. Mm-hmm. And so especially today, you have to be very quick with your innovation, but it has to be on point. And it has to be in the white space.
It's interesting that you mentioned this because through the years, we've had large businesses turn to us that they have like, you know, R&D teams that fill multiple buildings around the world. And they'd say to us, our science team is so amazing, but they don't know how to sell these ideas into the marketing team, right? So like years of creating new molecules or whatever, like get shelved because the communication between the development and the marketing team is not strong. And there's a lot of points in time when the breakdown could happen that makes your job harder. I'm thinking another one is like maybe the product's amazing, but we're not spinning it the right way, right? We're not telling the story the right way. So with you and your team in the field, like you guys are the actual experts on like what does a customer want to hear? So what does your customer want to know now? Like what is she looking for?
I think she's very smart, mm-hmm. and she's done all of her homework. So, you know, having a clean product is just the norm now. Mm-hmm. It's the baseline, right? Sustainability is a baseline. So those are no longer key points. I think you have to have credibility in your brand. You have to have a following. You have to have a community mm-hmm. that talks about your brand and that acknowledges your brand. They have to come in and ask for your brand. I mean, these are all important things, but the consumer wants it to work. So it has to be efficacious mm-hmm. and you have to have results. If she doesn't have results, she's moving on.
What you're describing, we summarize as trust, like the credibility, and then like you need all that trust and credibility before you can do the relevance, right?
Right.
Like I see a lot of businesses trying to like just jump into relevance, like basically paying their way to, you know, influence or whatever. And it doesn't resonate because there isn't that foundation of
Correct.
Trust. So Jeff, in the Sally world, I feel like your customer is like, she thinks of herself as a pro, even if she's not a pro. Am I right?
Kind of. What we've found with our customer, we actually did some research a couple years ago where the pro language was actually a deterrent.
Oh.
Because there was many years where, I think it was up until 1984, you did have to be a pro to mm-hmm. shop at Sally. And there's still a narrative that, mm-hmm. oh, I'm not a pro, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. But most of our customers are at-home consumers. Mm-hmm. The flip side is they want the confidence, the expertise to be able to do it.
Right.
Because coloring your hair is scary. I know, like, every salon stylist out there is like, don't do it, don't do it. But you can do it, and you can do it well. And that's where it's the point you made earlier. It's like knowing your customer. What do they want? And for the product innovation, it's not necessarily like, was the product itself bad? What was the messaging? What was the positioning? And were they trained or educated to use it up correctly? Because we just launched an incredible new product that is a very different way to use a leave-in treatment. And if you do it wrong, you'll get horrible results. But if you do it well, like I was platinum blonde last summer. Went like just ice blonde, and my hair was fried, and I used this thing.
Wait, did you color at home by yourself?
I did.
Mm-hmm. So you were a true Sally customer.
So we did a campaign one time for Vivid Hair mm-hmm. back in 2011, and we were doing this huge press event, and I'm looking around like, we can't go here as the leaders without Vivid Hair color. Mm-hmm. So I was like, platinum blonde time again, and we put the lavender in, and it's fun. It's hair. It grows back. Right. And so it's like, get out there and experiment with it. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to, it's the positioning, it's the education and the confidence of, can I achieve what I want? And to your point, can we be innovative enough? Because beauty moves
fast,
light speed.
Yeah. Well, and I want to talk about that when you're through it, because it's like exhausting.
It's one after another. And now with TikTok and the virality, we all have the attention spans of goldfish, so they want the next, the new, the new, the new. And so that pipeline is just getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Can you keep up?
So I feel like Sally, because it's a store and an exciting environment, I'm there to discover and learn. I feel like the new makes so much sense. But for Melon and Getz, like, my interpretation of the brand is like, these are the classics, like, right? So how do you guys handle this pressure to always have new?
Right. So at Malin and Getz, you know, we do have an innovation calendar, and I think you have to be true to your brand. So just because everyone is innovating doesn't mean the innovation is better, yes. Right? So you really, as a brand, you have to make sure that you are true to your brand and what you stand for. So it's not necessarily just jumping on the newest trend and knowing what is right for your brand.
So, like, you guys are in meetings, right, at Malin and Getz, and you're sitting around with your classic scents and your gorgeous, you know, like, iconic packaging, and you have all these pressures, all these arrows being, you know, directed towards you from the industry of, like, make more, make bigger, make things that spin. So what centers you all to just, like you said, focus on what you're really good at?
Well, I think it goes back to what the brand stands for, and that is easy, uncomplicated skincare. So not everybody wants the newest trend. They want something simple and easy to understand and easy to use. And also, you know, when the brand was first designed, it was really about being able to use it in the city life, mm-hmm. in a city environment. So we also bring that into the brand. So does it fit on your sink in your tiny little New York apartment, right? And so bringing that into it as well is important. And it's more of a lifestyle brand, mm-hmm. as well. So for instance, we're going to be launching, and we have launched, a tomato collection, right? So a beautiful scented candle. And of course, I'm giving away some of the goodies, but also, where else can you find tomato? Maybe be in a hand salve. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, these are really relevant to who we are, mm-hmm. the scents are to who we are. Plus, we have just created a hand soap for at the sink. Mm-hmm. So within this hand soap, it's really meant to be used in the kitchen when you're cooking and you have the garlic on your hands, and it's antibacterial and it takes away the smell. So these feel really relevant to the brand.
Liz, you literally just sold me on all of this.
I know, I'm like, you're a very good salesperson.
You're going to go buy this?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Right? When does it launch?
So this is going to be in August.
Okay.
So we did already come out with a tomato candle, mm-hmm. but we're having a new tomato candle coming as well, plus the hand soap and the hand salve. And really, what's so nice about this tomato scent is just imagine yourself if you close your eyes and you're in your back porch or in your garden and you have a little tomato tree, maybe on your fire escape, and you just pluck the tomato off, and what you smell is the vine, right? You smell that greenness on your fingertips. So imagine that smell, and that's the tomato scent that we've developed that feels resonates with the consumer.
Okay, snaps for Liz, yeah. And like seriously, like this whole story is so good. You're so good at your job.
Put you in the marketing. Yeah. Like getting the content.
Well, you know, I'm in sales, so I have to be able to talk about the products and be able to bring them to life for you.
Yeah, you just made me dream. So, great. It's very cool. Let's talk about this, Jeff, right? Sally's a store with dozens and hundreds of brands in it, right? And I'm sure you've seen brands sort of like not stay in their lane the way that Liz is describing. Right. What kind of advice do you give them when they start to go into territory that doesn't seem authentic?
That's actually a great question because there are some brands attempting to do this. And it's like one of two scenarios that I've witnessed when speaking with vendors. One is they know their current assortment and category is evolving or changing and they need or desire to go into a different way. So like it could be, hey, I'm moving from care into fragrance. Mm-hmm. That's a huge transition. It's a very different type of customer, very different buy cycle. As long as your brand ethos and to your point of what do you stand for? So for this brand that I'm thinking about, they have beautiful fragrance that started with their shampoos. Mm-hmm. As long as your brand equity and your brand identity doesn't change, I don't see a problem with going into different verticals or avenues. But if you go off and into a space that your customer is alienated, mm-hmm. you might as well just create a whole separate brand and treat them as separate entities. But when it comes to on shelf and in the store, you need to be very cognizant of your competition. You need to go walk the stores, look around, who's on shelf, how's the shelf placement, their packaging. And a big piece that I think when it comes to product development, especially packaging, that we always think about how it looks on the shelf, your customer is discovering digitally. And if you have a product that you're on on a Meta ad on your phone that's this big, and your packaging has like thousands of words on it, I can't see it. And so as we're working with brands to reimagine, like you have to now think about, as long as that icon is resonating and I can see that brand identity, it will translate further. But it's really just making sure if you want to stand out, know your competition, know what you're up against, but be true to your brand. If you want to reinvent yourself, call it a brand reinvention. Mm-hmm. But don't just say, hey, I'm doing this over here and hope for the best without realizing the work it takes to get there.
That situation makes me think of like that's a brand who's panicking.
Yes.
Right? They're panicking because they see what's going on around them, which is why I asked you, Liz, like how do you guys steal yourself, right? There's a lot of information coming in, a lot of pressures. Yeah. And I'm sure you might have some retail partners who are like, oh yeah, why don't you start a toothpaste or I don't know, a room spray or whatever might not feel right. Actually, room spray probably is totally appropriate, yeah. Right? Yeah. A sneaker brand. So this to me is like a brand and a leadership that's not comfortable like in their own shoes and they don't really know what kind of space they occupy. And they're panicking. And sometimes we talk about that as like CEO panic, right? Because maybe mm-hmm. the marketing team's like, what are you doing? And, you know, maybe the product development team's like, why are you doing this? But it's the CEO or CFO sort of panicking about the situation they're in.
Well, it's kind of the question, do you have a product or do you have a brand? Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies will just make product to get money. And it's a model, it works. But you don't build equity or someone to rally behind it. And to your point, you're just like throwing straws out there to see what sticks. Or what you're doing very well is I have a brand and as long as it goes through the brand filters and our integrity is still there, that is the decision factor before we get into ideation.
When Liz speaks, especially about the tomato stuff, I know what the Melanie Goetz house looks like. I know what the decor is like. I know what the backyard looks like. I know what kind of cars in the driveway, right? I know what kind of shopping bags are on the counter, right? Because you guys are so committed to who you are
to
as a brand.
Identity.
And this is essential. And that might mean, yeah, you're not selling, you know, things that are hot right now in another category, but you would never survive if you started messing with something that's not in the formula.
No, I think you have to really stay true to yourself. And I think when you start to ideate around products and product development and you're working with the team and internally, you have to think, is this on brand? And what does that mean to be on brand, right? Because we cross all categories. We have skincare, we have body care, we have home, we have fragrance, right? So we're in every category, but what does it mean to do it in the Malin and Goetz way?
Right.
And how do we bring that to life? I mean, and we're also a little cheeky. The brand is also a little cheeky. So we just like launched dog shampoo, right? Because dogs are a part of who we are.
Well, there's
are.
A dog in this house that I'm
about. Right. There's a dog in the house. Exactly.
Yes. I know what the dog bowl looks like.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're very true to the brand. And, you know, we really have a guardrails in the company that really keep us firm and straight on those guardrails.
So we're going to switch to the next phase, which is talking about like your toolbox. So Liz, let's talk about leadership style, right? You've been at all these different brands, had so much exposure to different ways of doing business. What is your leadership style and why do you think it works for your teams?
Well, you know, having been in being in sales, you know, it's a little bit different than I think the rest of the house and the building, right? Because I have to really tie everything together and I have to bring it to life and I have to own the relationship with the retail partners as well. So within my leadership and my team, I really invest a lot of time in them. They can make decisions. I bring them along on the path. I feel like I'm a great leader in a coaching and teaching position. I've had multiple employees that have worked with me who have gone to other brands and now are holding more of directors' roles. So really coaching and bringing them along on their journey is really, really critical.
It's so fun to watch people like succeed, right?
I just love it. And I love when they have wins and you let them do what they're going to do. You have to let people own a piece of it, right? And they have to be able to take it and own it.
So, Jeff, same question for you. Yep. You've had a lot of bosses through the years at a variety of different kind of industries. Like, what is your leadership style and why is it working for your team?
For me, it's funny. We just did an exercise called DISC, the D-I-S-C, where it's a personality matrix. And now we can all look at each other's area. So I'm dominant in influence. And so my team looked at me, they're like, bingo, that is you.
Okay, and I've worked with you and I would say that's absolutely you. Wow. Yeah.
It's just like, I like to set a very clear tone, vision, and guidance of this is what success looks like. And I want to get you excited to do it and not just like, here's a manuscript and here's what success, check in. It's like, we're going to do it together. But I have high expectations. Mm-hmm. That being said, the bosses who I try to model myself after are the ones who allowed me to make errors and not be chastised for it and learn from them. Because my team and I, I'll say it's like, hey, it's okay to fail. It is okay to fail. Did you learn something from it, though? And if you learn from it, most likely it won't happen again. Making them feel heard, seen, and safe to be themselves and to make mistakes and to challenge status quo. We just had a merger on my team and brought some departments together. And when we were doing our first intro, I was like, I want to hear your voice. I don't care what level you are. Because I'm a senior director, I have all the way down to coordinators. I don't care who you are. Your voice matters in this room. I want you to speak up. Because if you don't, I'm going to assume you're disengaged and I want to have a conversation about that and what's going on. What are you thinking? What do you want to do? So mine is just very proactive communication, set the expectations, but be the leader who will make sure that they are successful.
The way you just described this is exactly what you're hoping that the customer in the stores feel. Like, I can try something, I can make a mistake, I can learn from it. That's hair color.
Yeah.
Right? That's it.
Yeah.
That's totally at-home hair color.
Exactly.
Same with makeup, right? Same with anything. Well, I love this conversation. I'm going to move to the next phase of our show, last phase, which is our game. And we're going to try a game style that we've never done before. So this may or may not work. So bear with me. So the theme is New York City Italian dinner. Ooh. You're a native New Yorker. We're inviting Jeff along to dinner.
Where
okay.
Are we going?
Well, there's actually like 27 different restaurants that Natasha listed for me, but we're going to do this differently. The lightning round style means I'm going to give you two options of something to eat, and I need you to both answer exactly at the same time, and we'll see if you agree or not.
Okay.
And since this is a audio show, this might become a total disaster because people will be listening in their cars or on the train. They'll be like, I don't know what anybody's saying, but we're going to give it a try.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you two options. You're going to say what you're ordering. Are we ordering burrata or baked clams?
Burrata.
Frittata.
Ooh. It worked. Okay, let's try another one. Vodka sauce or pesto?
Vodka sauce.
Vodka sauce.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Love it.
Let's try to get, like, I'll do one, two, three. Okay. No, I'll say it and then just one. Okay. Are you ordering red wine or espresso martini?
Red wine.
Wow, we're very well paired here. Okay. Are you choosing outdoor dining or candlelit booth?
Outdoor dining.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Tiramisu or cannoli?
Tiramisu.
This is crazy.
We did not practice this.
Okay. If you weren't going back on a plane, I would say we should get dinner together.
I'll pop all those things.
Yeah. I'll fly back up next
time. So, okay, where are we going? Little Italy or West Village?
Little Italy.
Okay. Okay. Are we a crew that has a reservation book weeks ahead or spontaneous walk-in?
Reservation.
I have a reservation.
I'm a reservation too. Yeah. Okay. Are we fancy Italian or old school neighborhood spot?
Old school.
And last one, bread basket. Are we going to ignore it or destroy it immediately?
Destroy it.
I'm going to ignore it.
That's more for you.
I will destroy it. I need carbs.
This is such a fun conversation. Thank you, Bull. Thank you, everybody in the audience too.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.